Hi, everybody. This is Vicki Ronchetti with Show Dog Prep School. And today we are here for our Breeder of Influence interview with my friend Karen Oglesby of Karoo Silky Terriers and also Mies en Place, right? Kennels. So Karen breeds Silky Terriers. I always start off these interviews by saying how we met. And how we met is at Northern California Dog Shows for the last, you know, forever years. And Karen actually graciously took Reba into the ring for me and finished her grand championship. Remember? Because I think yeah. I had to stay on her son, Rook, my other dog, Rook, and Karen finished Reba. So that's how we know each other. So let's just jump into it. Tell me, who is Karoo? And I also want to know, is it you? Is it, you know, I know that there was family involved. So tell me a little bit about that.
Right. So Karoo Silkies is K-A for Karen, R-O for Rhonda, who's my mother, and then O for Oglesby. So anything that I breed with her has the Karoo kennel name on it. Mies en Place is the kennel name that I use with my husband. It's also the name of our ranch. So we have Mies en Place Ranch, Mies en Place Shetland Sheep, Mies en Place Gotland Sheep, Mies en Place Nubian Goats. And we just use it for all of that.
Yeah. So is he into the dogs too? Like, is he into it in the breeding and showing aspect or any of that?
He is. He's a chef, so he's often working on weekends. And if you know any culinary terms, mise en place is the culinary term, meaning everything in place, like having your prep and everything in order. So he loves the dogs. He loves to go to shows when he can, but he doesn't always get to. He really likes performance. In fact, we're hoping in the next year to get a lab for him for hunting. He works for a private hunting club now. So he'll be working in that venue. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
You should get a pointer.
I know.
I'm like so obsessed with pointers.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too.
But, you know, sometimes we got to let these dudes have something of their own that they want.
Exactly. And that's kind of where it went, was like, okay, well, let's figure out what we can do. And I can deal with it. I can have a lab.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So did you grow up showing and breeding? Like you mentioned, you and your mom started the kennel. Were you a kid? I feel like
I mean,
of you as a little kid, like in juniors and stuff.
Yeah.
So you did juniors and grew up showing?
Yep. I would say I was younger than 10 when we started with the Silkies. And then I went into juniors like at 10 years old, found it really juniors wasn't for me, and no offense to the juniors program or to any juniors, but I'm not what I would say is a finesse handler. I don't have the junior handler type of handling. I mean, what I bring to the table is a very well-groomed dog, presented well, but I don't blend into the background. So juniors just, it wasn't my niche. I found a lot more success in the breed ring and the group ring.
And so did you guys start out like, so when you were a kid, had your mom already been breeding and showing Silkies, and then you just like, you know, were born and then all of a sudden you had to do that too? Or was this something you guys started on together?
It was about the same time with the Silkies. Yeah. Mom and we'd always had purebred dogs. But she started with her first Silky and I kind of quickly took that over.
Okay. But you weren't showing before the Silkies.
No, I was not.
Okay. So that's cool. So then you guys decided to get into this together but you did most of the handling.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, at the very first time I went in the ring, it was like, I was hooked. I mean, absolutely hooked. I'm a very competitive person by nature, and it really suited me.
Yeah. So my next question is, do you handle your own dogs? And you are, or were, a professional handler. Are you still handling professionally some?
A little bit. So next year I'm going for my judging license. So I am, in April, things are going to start really moving. So I'm kind of cutting people loose. Mm-hmm. I still have one of my client's dogs here with me, and I showed him at the Candy Cane Cluster. It's going to be really sad to see him go home, but that's the last one, I think.
Uh-huh. So, yeah. Because when you go to become a judge, obviously you can only show your own dogs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you kind of have to make a decision at that point. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And I think it's time to move forward. I mean, it's been 40 years in this, so I think it's time to move forward with that judging license.
You know, I feel like handling looks fun when people are winning, right? You know, but it's like, I mean, when I see all my friends who are handlers and just all the hours on the road and or struggling. I remember a few years ago when nobody could get dogs to Westminster because nobody was flying that big of kennels. And it's like, you know, I mean, all that kind of stuff. I mean, it really looks like from when you see that side of it, that it's a pretty stressful occupation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not all just going in and winning, going in a circle in a nice suit and getting a ribbon. There's just hours and hours of work that goes into it. And in 2020, I was thinking about stepping back a little bit. And then obviously we all know what happened in 2020.
Yeah.
And I went back to healthcare, working in healthcare. And I was the COVID team lead for County Public Health. And I have to tell you that job was less stressful than being a professional handler.
At that time too?
Yeah.
That says a lot. So you haven't been handling like full time, like that's your job for a long time. Are you still working in that field?
Healthcare or in
handling? Yeah, in healthcare.
I've switched it up a little bit. I'm an emergency manager for a hospital, for actually two hospitals, Adventist Health St. Helena, Adventist Health Vallejo. And what that is disaster planning and preparedness. So I do all of that for those locations.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, I'll take a couple clients to a show here and there, but
yeah,
none. Yeah.
But when you say that actually was a much less stressful job, so it felt good getting back into the healthcare
field. Yeah, it felt really good. There's something that we say over and over again is that we're not saving lives in the dog show world. I mean, it's a passion, it's a hobby. I know some people, this is a lot of their existence, but it's really nice to have something outside of that as well. And it really gave me a lot of perspective.
Yeah, and just not being in it 24/7, right? Being able to just like step back.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's been great. I've been able to show some of my own dogs. My dogs always either were handed off to somebody or they missed their ring or whatever. So it's been really nice to be able to show my own dogs and participate in specialties and
focus on that, especially as a breeder, you know, like that's kind of what you want to do. So speaking of breeding, I want you to tell me a little bit about your breed and how you got interested in them just what makes you love them.
So I actually have three breeds. I am coming back into Silky Terriers. What I love about Silkies is that you get a little bit of glamour and a tough little package. They are a true toy terrier. They're always active, ready for anything. I also have Dachshunds, miniature Dachshunds, miniature wire hairs, what I breed. I love their comical personalities. I love the scruffy look, and I love that they can go for hours in the field. I also breed Portuguese Podengo Pequenos. I love that they're a rustic little dog, minimal grooming, really. I love that they're always ready to go. They're always up for everything. And they're just a positive little dog. Nothing really terrifies them. Nothing, you know, that nothing knocks them off their game.
Yeah. Yeah. But are they, like a sort of anybody can have them kind of dog, or are they so busy that they really need a job and are not going to be good just as a house pet?
Yeah. They're a primitive breed. So, I mean, mine are in the house. I know a lot of people keep them in the house, but they're not for everybody. I mean, I know that it's one of the things my husband struggles with is that they're so busy. They're just constantly going, and you can tell them not to do something and they'll just look at you with a smile and do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just
independent, like, free thinking.
Yeah. They're like, no, they'll store something away. Like if you say, don't touch that, or leave that alone, they'll store it away and come back to it later when you're not around. So they're not for everybody. I think I talk more people out of them than into them.
What about the Silkies? Do you think they're more for, like, just most people can deal with them as far as being like a companion?
They're a little easier. It's just that they are a terrier. So you have to keep those boundaries with them. And be very clear about what is expected and what is not allowed.
Mm-hmm. Especially yeah. living on a farm where you have livestock too. So they need to, all of your dogs need to hopefully learn not to kill things. Right.
Yeah. We've had some chicken massacres over the years, but
I'll bet.
Yeah.
But you consider Silkies like your breed of your heart.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I was a little disenchanted with the breed for a bit there. As we discussed earlier, I've restarted twice because of health issues.
Yeah, I do want to talk about this for sure.
I think I was really thinking I wasn't going to come back to Silkies. And then my then client, now good friend and breeder, Cindy McAllister, offered me a puppy last year. And I couldn't say no. So getting back into it. But yeah, touching back on the health issues, you know, in the 80s and early 90s, there was the thought that Silky Terriers didn't have health issues. And then, as I was telling you earlier, we'd had a couple generations, and then we were at a show and there just happened to be an eye clinic, which was a rarity at the time. Especially, I mean, I didn't mention, but I grew up in Alaska. So small shows, small dog community.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So we took all the dogs over to the clinic after showing and found out we had PRA, we had affected dogs, and we didn't know. We had no idea. So then we had to think about, you know, we called our original breeder, let them know. We were letting people know about it, but people were very much in denial. Mm-hmm. And then fast forward, we found a marker for PRA and Silkies. However, genetically, Australian Silky Terriers and American bred Silky Terriers have different types of PRA. PRA-A is for Australian, PRA-CD is for American bred. The marker is for the dogs that are bred in Australia. So if I were to test my stock, they would seem fine genetically, but it's because we're not testing the marker for the type that they would have.
So you can't have that tested in Australia? Like, can a sample be sent there?
Well, no, we can have it tested. It's just not the same version of PRA. So we have a marker for the version that we don't have in American dogs.
Oh, okay. I got it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you can,
That's hard.
A lot of people think, oh, I have this marker, I'm going to test, and then they're clear, but they may not be. Right. So we still do eye testing. My second restart, I had a lovely little bitch. She's actually asleep on my, well, she's awake now, but she's over on my couch. She's 12 years old. Again, I was at a show. I sent my husband over to the eye clinic. I said, just run her over real quick, just get this taken care of, and then run her back, not thinking anything of it. And he comes back and he goes, she didn't pass. And I'm like, what do you mean she didn't pass? And then, like, you know, everything went cold. And I thought, oh, my God, again.
So, but was that the American, like version or whatever? Like,
yeah. So all the American dogs will have the American version, which there is not a marker for.
Okay. So yeah. The only way to know is they're affected. Is that right?
What was that?
The only way to know if they have it is if they're affected by it.
Right.
So you can't know who's a carrier or who's clear or anything.
Yep. Yep. Oh. And, you know, this is a late onset eye disease. So I think she was, I want to say 5 or 6. And she'd been bred once already by a co-breeder. And then I was ready to have her bred like that week. Like, she was ready to go. Wow. And the timing just lined up. So, yeah.
So when that happened with your mom and you, when you were younger, mm-hmm. did you have to basically just like shut down that whole thing?
Yeah.
And then you kind of had to do that again.
Yeah. Because we didn't have enough genetic diversity to know which direction to go, or even we didn't know which were affected, or we knew which were affected. We didn't know who might be a carrier. And now looking back on it, I'm thinking it's likely all of them were carriers and probably our foundation bitch was affected, but we didn't have an ophthalmologist to look at her at that time. I mean, there wasn't eye specialty vets in Alaska at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what made you, so you're starting over then a third time.
Mm-hmm.
And so what made you do that? You just love them so much.
I mean, I do. And, you know, as I was saying, I was somewhat disenchanted. I was having issues with the direction the parent club was going and some of the choices people were making. And, you know, I just really was like, I'm going to take a break and see what we can do. Because Silkies have such a small gene pool. I mean, our breed is really becoming a very rare breed. I don't know that with the bitch that I have now that I could go back into line breeding. I mean, I have an idea of who I could breed her to, but I may just have to breed her to whatever aligns phenotypically rather than genotypically. So
well, that's really interesting because like I grew up meaning learned about breeding and had my first show dogs with people who had dachshunds, right? And I was taught, mm-hmm. and my next question is this about, you know, whether or not you use a formula. I was taught the formula of line breeding, right? Where you line breed, go out, come in. But then I got Laochens and it's like, no, you can't do that because they're all related, right? You know, a generation or two behind, you know, everybody
yeah. comes
and there's so few here that, you know, you basically have to import dogs from different places to get any diversity at all. So that is really challenging to relearn, right? Starting doing it the other way. So you're in that boat with the Silkies. It's like
with the Silkies, yeah. With the Podangos, we have enough options now that I feel like I can. Oh, almost lost you. Sorry. I feel like I can do some line breeding, but also, I'm seeing other people are having successes with going out to less closely related animals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can have the best laid plans in breeding dogs and it all goes out the window. I mean, I'm starting to change my mindset to just, you know, do your breeding, what you think is going to be best. And see what happens. I mean, you can take two beautiful dogs that line up perfectly on paper and get things that just that are not show quality or not even any sort of breeding quality. I mean, it's such a crapshoot anyway. I know there are some really successful kennels out there. I mean, Klessix is one of the ones that I think about all the time. Like they have had success in all of their breeds. I'm sure they've had some failures as well, but they seem to have a great formula down. I would love to see that written on paper, like how they decide what they're breeding to who and how many, even the logistics of how many intact males and females you keep.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we don't have the big kennels that they used to have back in the day where they just had multiple dogs.
Right. I mean, we're not even allowed to do that in our little houses and neighborhoods, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like have 50 dogs or and kennel staff and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Like I think people used to be able to do. So, I do want to talk about that. So, let's start about this part first though. Tell me about your foundation animals and you can tell me about Silkies or Dachshunds or Potangos, or you can tell me about any dogs that just make you feel excited to talk about. Your foundation.
So we can talk about way back when with the Silkies. And I was telling you how we got our first Silky. We did as much research as we could, which was going to a Dog Fancy magazine and just calling people out of the back and seeing who would send us a dog. I mean,
I bought a poodle one time out of Dog Fancy. Like I was like 20. Well, I was still married to my first husband, so I must have been 20. And it was like, yeah, there wasn't the internet.
Right. There was none of that. No. I mean, how did you know how to get a Silky Terrier? We didn't know what Silky Terrier Club of America was. We didn't know. Right. I mean, we just didn't know these things. So
And you couldn't find them like you can find them now. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, and even now,
a thing to go look, you know?
Yeah, and even now, silkies are hard to find. I mean, finding a pretty bitch that's going to take me somewhere took a long time. I mean, my last bitch, I said she's 12 years old, and then now I've got this new one. I mean, it's not easy, even for somebody that's been in silkies forever. It's not easy. So that was the foundation there. And my starting over now is with a little dog I call Monkey. Her name is not actually Monkey. It's Lexi, but we've never once called her that. We've always called her Monkey.
This is the new puppy, the new baby.
Yeah, the new baby. Okay. And I mean, I'm pretty excited about her. In Podengo Pequenos, my first was Parata II de Viamonte. And if you're in that breed, then you know he was the first national specialty winner. He was best breed at Westminster. And I mean, he was the first gold grand champion, blah, blah, blah. First, I think, hound specialty winner, hound group specialty winner. I mean, it just ribbons, ribbons, ribbons. But more importantly, he produced one of my favorite dogs, who is the Captain, who is owned by one of my good friends and person that I breed with, who actually lives in the same town as me, Susan Souza. So, you know, he's a great producer. I feel generous with giving frozen semen to people. If they want it, if they can get fresh, I will give it to them. Just use him as best as you can.
Is he still alive?
He is still alive. Okay. He is still as naughty as ever. He's just one of those dogs that when I say they don't care, like when you tell him not to do something, he just will like do this little twist and smile and wag his tail. Like he just doesn't care. And he's, what is he now? I think he's going to be 14 in April. Yeah. 14 in April. And I mean, oh my God, he still looks beautiful.
You know, what's interesting is that when people want to get into breeding, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's recommended that you get a bitch, right? But I think it's hard to get a nice bitch. I think that when people come to me and they're like, I really want a good show dog, I'm like, well, for one thing, I'm obsessed with boy dogs. I love boy dogs. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, it'll probably be easier to get a male. I think it's easier to go further to get a male. But it sounds like with the Podengos, your foundation was a male, right?
Yeah. And then
were you able to get stuff back out of him or something?
Yeah, so he came to me as a handling dog, as a client dog in a way. And I say in a way because his other owner, his co-owner and I have known each other my entire life. So it doesn't feel like client type of situation. So he came to me for that. And then she was doing a lot of the breeding because I was too busy. But you know, going back to getting a male, if you want a show dog and you want to get your feet wet, that's the way to do it. Really just prove that you can learn, that you are, I would say, easy to work with, that you get along with people, just, you know, putting in your time,
right.
That you're serious about being
willing,
competing.
I think the being willing to listen and learn is really important.
It's very important. Know. Very important. I mean, and I know that I've not always been that willing, but it's come back to me. It's come back to me. And I try to mentor as much as I can. I mean, if anybody wants to ask me a question, they can ask me a question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you have a formula for your breeding program? Or do you feel like when you said it's hard to get like a really nice silky, do you think sometimes we lose consistency? Obviously, if you can't do the line breeding, do you think it's harder to get consistency?
What I'm seeing is family groups with family styles. And I feel that we need to just be breeding more dogs that maybe aren't stellar quality, but have a good foundation on them. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to lose fronts. We've got some with good fronts now, and in the past we did not. So I think preserving that, and then what I would say is putting the frosting on later, getting that beautiful coat on later. Just really paying attention to the hallmarks, the breed, and the major faults, and and just doing the best that we can. I just feel like we need to get more on the ground. I mean,
what are the hallmarks of the breed?
For me, it's that silhouette of the head. That you should look at this and know it's a Silky Terrier. You shouldn't think it's a Yorkie. You shouldn't think it's an Australian Terrier. It's something in between the two of those. They're a tricolor dog. And I don't like to focus on talking about color because sometimes judges focus on coats and color rather than structure. But this is a Terrier. This is a true toy Terrier. That beautiful blue coat with a fawn or platinum top knot and deep, rich, rusty tans. If you find a really beautiful tri-color silky, like the color is just beautiful and natural. It's just, to me, there's nothing like it. And the coat is, again, it's just the frosting. It should be cool to the touch, silky, durable. But again, underneath that, we're looking at outline. We're looking at a little terrier that can do its job. It can dispatch snakes and mice and vermin of all sorts.
So they work. They really do work.
They do. I've had some that were like, oh no. if anybody remembers Pricey, who I had out for a couple of years, we were doing some vermin cleanup. We bought a property that was just tons of junk on it. Tons. So every time we would lift something up, rats would run out. It was horrible. And I had dachshunds, Podengo Pequeños, and Silkies working.
You're like, we got this. We got this.
Yeah,
covered.
Yeah. And she was standing in the doorway looking out and going, every time she saw a rat. So she wasn't included in that. But the rest of mine are very good hunters.
I had a long-haired dachshund, Ribbon, who was out of like a killer field dog. He would take her to the field. And, you know, I remember she took two steps and like got a poker in her foot and was like, and it's like, oh honey, like this is just, we haven't even gotten started. Like this might not be a thing, you know? And she was just like, this is so not for me.
Yeah. My foundation dachshund Havana, I breed with Monica and Azalea Alvarez, and Monica took her to a field trial. Cause I don't remember what I was doing. Cause I love to go to field trials, but I wasn't able to go. So she took her. And then she said that she spent the whole time, Havana spent the whole time asking to be carried.
Yeah.
And was like, this one doesn't work. So we say she's very indoorsy. She doesn't like to go outside.
I saw Monica at Orlando, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I was watching dachshunds and I went over there and I didn't even realize it was her because I was coming up from behind and so I got to say hi to her. So that was nice.
Oh, I wish I could have gone. That's like my second family. Yeah. I love spending time with them.
So that's where you started showing, right? Then in Alaska?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so Alaska, I mean, they have very few shows, right?
Right. I think there's like 14 or 15 all breed shows per year. Yeah, wow. Not very many. And
not
then
an
some
easy
of them
place to learn and get started, huh?
Yeah. I have to say, we had somebody who, you know, we were going to the local handling class and learning from people that maybe didn't have silkies but had seen a silky and kind of had an idea how to do this. The thing that I remember the most is we didn't have to ask anybody for help. They just told us. They were just there. They just were like, no, don't take a slicker to that coat. Don't do that. We'll help you with this. And then we had this woman, Barbara Boardwell, who lived in Anchorage, which is like 150 road miles north, who just took us on. I mean, just took us on. And I can remember being at her house a lot, staying at her house for shows, looking at all of her dogs. I don't remember breeding discussions as much because I was really young, but I remember looking at all of them and just learning about the different styles and what I liked more, like developing an eye for the breed based on what she had.
Did she put your hands on the dogs and say,
she did? She did. And then I can remember her being really harsh about some grooming things and grooming mistakes and things. And I still hear it. I still hear her voice when we're talking about like a clean dog. I mean, that to me is a key to people talk about silky terrier coat and conditioning, and that's it, a clean coat that's been conditioned that you're taking care of. It's not a lot. You don't have to wrap this coat. You don't have to do a lot with it. It's just
so
clean.
That's what I was going to ask you. Are they not a lot of work?
So I think it's a very like well-kept secret that they aren't as much work. With Monkey, keeping her clean, it's difficult because we do live on a ranch, but once a week bath, I go through her to make sure there aren't any stickers in her, no mats, and the conditioning, using a good conditioner on her every week. I think I'm to the point now I may have to put some oil in her coat just because it's getting a little wrecked. You know, and I let my dogs all run together. So she's running with a smooth Pequeno bitch who likes to grab onto her, and the oil's going to first discourage that because it tastes awful, but also it'll help keeping it from getting ripped out
and breaking and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me some of your favorite dogs, and it could be all across all three breeds that carry your kennel name.
Oh my goodness. So we had Huckleberry, who was from my first dachshund litter.
I know Huckleberry.
Remember Hucky? He was just awesome. He was everything that you would want in temperament for a wire-haired dachshund. I mean, comical, funny, always ready to go. If people started laughing, he would take that information and he'd say, I'm going to keep doing that. He was just great. A great little show dog. Let me think here. In Silkies, we had a dog named Clover, who she wasn't a glamorous dog. I had her for 16 years. She passed away next to me in my bed. Wasn't glamorous, not a lot of coat, but it was a proper coat. It was self-leveling. She had great structure, a great body underneath her. Beautiful head, a dark, dark eye, dark almond-shaped eye, which is something we're losing in the breed. There's points of her that I just love. And then in Pequenos that are mine, I have a dog named Badger. Badger is a Parada son out of one of my favorite bitches that I begged to lease. And then when we knew there was only going to be one puppy, I said, let's just forget the lease and we'll just co-breed this. Mm-hmm. There's things about him I just love. He was reserve at the National, and the dog that was winner's dog over him won the breed from the classes. So, and that was bred by my friend Susan Souza that I mentioned. So, you know, if you're going to lose winner's dog at the National, then let's have it be like to your best friend who goes on to win the breed. Yeah. So, there's things about him I just love. I'm really excited. I just bought a bitch last year that I'm going to be breeding either to Parada Captain or Badger. Parada may be a little bit older than
is that the smooth one? Is that the smooth one that I met?
Oh, no. That's a pretty little bitch named Sylvie. Parada's the older one, but yeah, Badger is a wire. He's got the kind of classic Irish markings. I didn't show him as much. He just kind of, like, he liked it, but he didn't love it. Mm-hmm. And it was at the time I was handling a lot for people, so he was always getting second string. But when we're talking about that little smooth bitch, she's just looking better and better. I just love her.
She's really cute, too.
She's really cute. She's great. And then outside of my dogs, let's see, in Silkies, there's a really beautiful dog out of Canada that just finished in Orlando. I won the breed from the classes, I think, a couple days. Maybe it was the specialty, and maybe it was the day on Saturday, but don't quote me on that. He's really pretty. He's a little more coarse than what I own, But it's not incorrect. And it's really like he just flows. Everything in him flows. Like his type is really pretty. It kind of brings it back to that, like in between a Yorkie and Australian Terrier. He's like right in between there. He's beautiful top line, beautiful mover. His coat looks good in pictures. I've only seen him in pictures, and I feel like you have to put your hands on it to know it.
Yeah.
Beautiful dark tans. I mean, some of the things that we're missing. There's a beautiful dog out of Michigan that's been doing some winning. But besides that, it's a nice dog. Like I've seen a couple of videos of it just kind of hanging out, walking around, which I prefer.
Yeah.
To, you know, the show dog struts. Yeah. And then, I mean, there's dogs here and there that pop up on Facebook that I'm like, wait, who is that? Let me scroll back and take a look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So with the Podangos, obviously they're all shown together, the smooths and the wire coats.
Right? Yeah, we can split the open class if the club allows it.
Okay. But mm-hmm. generally you breed them together, right? Like you.
I do not.
Oh, okay.
Some people do. And this is one of those things where it's like, I don't feel like anybody's right or wrong. But for me, the reason that I don't breed them is because we get something called a half hair if you breed smooth to wire. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a pin wire in dachshunds, mm-hmm. but it's not desirable. Like in dachshunds, if I get, I have a pin wire and a pin over here, a puppy mm-hmm. that I just produced. I mean, I love it. I love it on dachshunds, but in Podangos, it's just not desirable. It's in between. You have to decide which way you're going to go. If you're going to pluck it all out or show right. them with just a little gristle on the sides. But yeah, I don't breed them together.
Yeah. And especially if you feel like you can accomplish what you need to without it, you know?
Yeah. It's more of a challenge. So this smooth, I don't know who we're going to take her to. And I'm going to leave that up to my friend Susan to make that decision. She kind of has more of an idea of what's out there than I do. And technically it is hers. I mean, the puppy came back to her as a puppy back, and I was at her house and I said, "Ooh, I love her." And she goes, "Do you want her?" And I said, "Yes." And she just threw it in crate and I was like, "Bye, I'll see you later."
But I mean, it's gotta be hard. I didn't know that. I would assume that you could just breed them together and it was no big deal. So, I mean, I think she's the only smooth one I've ever seen. So
there's some out there, and yeah. you can get smooth out of wire also. But just for me, for coat quality, I'm just going to just stay wire to wire, smooth to smooth. Mm-hmm. So that does make it more of a challenge. I mean, there's genetically I'm going to have to go out of California, maybe Michigan, maybe I think might be something in North Carolina. I mean, I'm going to have to really do some looking to figure out what I'm going to use with her or yeah. what let Susan use with her is what I'll say. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about, just since I have you on here, about the health and hardiness of that breed. Are they pretty?
Wow. They're a really hardy breed. I find that we don't have issues with stomach sensitivities. I mean, these are little street dogs of Portugal. They eat what they catch, you know, and they just don't seem to have issues in that way. We have had some legs, calves, perthies show up. Mm-hmm. And then I always have patellas checked. I have eyes, and then I do x-ray hips on them.
Mm-hmm. But generally pretty healthy.
Yeah, generally really healthy. And with the LCP, it's one of those things that it doesn't have a genetic link. So mm-hmm. it could just be like, it just, you know, it can show up in dogs that would be clear otherwise.
Uh-huh. It just happens or it doesn't.
Yeah,
it just happens later in life.
No. LCP is something that it's usually before, like, I think 4 to 6 months or something, they'll start to develop a limp. We've seen the ones that have developed it have had surgery to correct this. And don't ask me the actual mechanism of the disease, like of the injury of the disease, because I can't recall at the moment, mm-hmm. but it's in your hip area.
And it can be repaired and the dog can go on to live.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's one that I saw. She's in the pet home, obviously, but gosh, I saw her owner just brought her to a show and I was watching her walk away and there was just the very slightest little hitch. It wasn't mm-hmm. a limp. It was just like a little defect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so nice when it's not a problem that's life threatening and that, you know,
yeah.
Or there's levels of it where it's not real bad. It's not going to affect the animals.
Yeah. Like the PRA and Silkies, you know, they do go completely blind. Sometimes they can have pressure in the eyeball, like a glaucoma type of situation. Sometimes they have to have their eyes removed. My bitch that's over here who's snoring away at the moment, she doesn't have any pain. She's just completely mm-hmm. blind, but she knows her way around. I mean, yeah. She's recently lost her hearing, so that's even more of a challenge. But, you know, I'm trying to train, you know, Coffee, you know, my Aussie. Uh-huh. So yeah. Background to everybody, I have an Aussie that came to me to work sheep, and she's the best dog. She's like having a lassie dog. I'm trying to train her to go get her out of the yard for me.
Oh, nice.
Like to go tell her to come in. So
that would be a good job for an Aussie.
Yeah. Yeah. My Coffee girl.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to add about your Silkies or any of the breeds or anything else that you'd like to just share with people?
You know, if you're interested in Silky Terriers, just reach out to me. I'm happy to champion them and see who I can help you find a dog if you're looking for one. I'm hoping, you know, in the next 2 years, I'll be breeding a litter. Portuguese Podengo Pequenos. I'm on the board of that club as well. If you're interested in that breed, reach out. We have a lot of educational materials. I feel like
those two breeds are in trouble. I mean, in terms of numbers.
Like, yeah.
People who are interested should feel like they would be doing a good thing.
They'd be preserving a breed. I think Silkies are in more trouble. Podengos, our club membership grows every month. It's a very inclusive club. For the most part, we tend to get along, especially in California, Northern California. We work so hard because we have to. I mean, we have to build majors together. We have to work together with breeding. But outside of that, I feel like we have a pretty friendly, inclusive group. We like to welcome new people. I mean,
that's so huge.
It's refreshing. It's refreshing coming from some other breeds.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing this. It was really fun talking to you. And thank you for helping me with my own dogs.
That's no problem. It's always my pleasure.
So you guys can find Karen on Facebook. It's Karoo, K-A-R-O-O is the kennel name.
Mm-hmm.
But also Karen Oglesby on Facebook, right?
Best
place to find you probably.
Yep. That's the best place.
All right. Thanks, Karen.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good holiday, everybody.
Thanks.